Yo, what's good, y'all? Welcome to the John Katz Show, episode number 33. For those of y'all watching on YouTube or listening, I hope it doesn't sound worse. I got a new microphone hooked up here, so I'm going to see how this sounds. If it doesn't sound great, I'm going to go back to the old one. But I like the way it looks better. It's the Joe Rogan mic. I've been wanting that other one. Was bothering me a little bit. I don't know why. This thing looks a little cleaner. It's huge, though. Looks like a big black microphone. All right. Happy New Year. New Year's Day. This is a New Year's episode. I hope everybody had an amazing New Year's Eve last night. Y'all might be listening to this a little hungover. So I hope everybody's feeling good and looking forward to starting out fresh with a nice 2022. 21 was definitely a crazy year, you know, for a lot of reasons, pandemic and a lot of other things going on in the country and in the world. And I think personally for a lot of us, it was a pretty crazy year. So I think a lot of people are ready to get on with a clean slate, get some stuff going. You know, people always say like, you know, what do you need a holiday for to tell you to do this? Like, do you really need Valentine's to be sweet and get flowers? Do you need like, you know, no, you don't need it, but it's good to have those kind of like, there's something to be said for, you know, like group energy and kind of, you know, if a lot of people at the same time become of the mindset like, all right, let's go with a clean slate. Let's try to improve. Like, there's something to be said for that. It's contagious in a way, just like everybody I was saying last episode kind of feels like magical and childlike around the holidays or Christmas. It's like New Year's does have a refreshing feel. A lot of people are ready to just kind of go, you know what, fuck it. Let's get on to the next great thing, especially now because stuff's been so crazy. I saw a video. A guy was saying, might have been on TikTok. They were saying, take throughout the year, every great thing that happens to you, write it down, stick it in a jar. And then at the end of the year, you open up the jar and you're reminded of all these amazing things. And you know, you feel grateful and thankful. You realize, oh, I really did have a great year. Oh, look at all these great things that happened. People do, you know, we tend to focus on the negative more than we do the positive. I thought that was a pretty cool idea. I don't know, resolutions. What are y'all's resolutions? I failed at it recently. I was doing good there for a minute with the whole, I mean, it's the most cliche resolution ever is smoking, right? So I'd love to quit smoking. I'm still a smoker. I didn't want to smoke at this age still, but it's a motherfucker. And it's stupid to say you need a new year to quit, but whatever. Might as well give it another shot. I'm in a place right now where I'd probably be more capable of doing it, to be honest, than when other stuff is going on. So you know what? I don't even want to say it on here because like more pressure. Again, I've talked about I'm the type of dude where it's like it's got to be my idea. You know, if I say it and then other people are like, hey, how's it going with that? It's like, I don't know. It's a weird inclination. You don't like other people to be thinking of it for you or I don't know. But yeah, I'd love to quit. I don't think anyone who smokes in this day and age likes the fact that they're a smoker. Like, I don't know any smokers who are like, yeah, I wouldn't like to quit if I could. Like, I think every smoker, if they could just flip a switch and never want another one again, they would press that button. They flip that switch, in my opinion. You know, people always do the, and listen, I say all the time, health's the most important thing. So it makes sense. People do the whole, I'm going to eat better. I'm going to go to the gym more. I'm going to quit smoking. I'm going to drink less. I'm going to quit drinking. It's like, there's a lot of that. I think people should focus equally as much on like, you know, some of the personality stuff. Like, you know, like I'm always focusing on the fact that life is so short and I say it all the time, but it's really the biggest thing. And to that regard, everybody should really, you know, be as open and honest and vulnerable as possible. And it's what I keep talking about in the last couple episodes, and it's so true. And it's something I have to keep drilling into my own head, which is you know, wasting time, keeping your guard up and living in your head and pushing people away and being stubborn and fucked up and embracing all of that and wasting even 1 second on, you know, self-pity and regret and all those kinds of things and worrying and insecurity, feeling embarrassed, feeling ashamed, any of that stuff. It's such a waste, and it's it creates such a snowball long-term effect in your life. And you listen, you really will. I'm 42. I say all the time, I'm 42. And midlife crisis shit is real. And I don't mean buying a convertible and driving fast and dating the college girl. I mean, you reach a point where you go, oh shit, like this thing doesn't last too long. And, you know, on top of what your abilities, physical, mental, the capability that you have to engage in the world in a meaningful way, that doesn't last forever either. So, and it's like, you got the one life. And everybody, not everybody, listen, you got Kevin Hart and these guys out there making us all look bad, but a lot of us have just wasted a lot of time on bullshit. And a lot of the bullshit is just in our own heads. It's not even real bullshit. It's like, we put these own imaginary limitations on ourselves and we tell ourselves these fake stories of what we're capable of and what we're not and what we should be afraid of and what we shouldn't and what we should try. It's like, it's a fucking mental prison. And if you do have your health and you do have the essentials and you're able to drink clean water every day and have clean clothes and get to and from places with transportation, like, and now you're just putting yourself in a mental box while your life is just ticking by. So my New Year's resolution, on top of the smoking and all that, is to try to just be as open as possible, whether that means communicating with people as honestly as possible or engaging with you know, different opportunities and doing different things. Because why not? It's like, The opposite is scarier. If there's something anybody wants to do or is personally passionate about, whatever that is, you really need to just do it and not worry about what anyone's going to think. And even if you fail at it, like, great, you failed at something you wanted to do rather than something you hate. People always fail at things they don't even like. That doubles, like, at least do something you're interested in and then fail at that instead. And then I would say on top of that, to share positivity and uplift, like, nobody tries to uplift other people ever. It's like, and it's diminished. It's gotten way less than it even used to be. Like, maybe I'm on social media too much, which is just a cesspool, Twitter and all that. But I said on there the other day, like, imagine if people just tweeted something positive and uplifting for everything negative they tweeted. Like, you wouldn't be able to recognize the platform at that point. Like, so much vitriol, so much hatred, so much people just trying to, you know, one up each other and gotcha and make each other own each other and make each other look stupid. And look, I've done plenty of that myself. I'm not saying don't debate people and engage in healthy debates and all that, but the personal attacks. And then also, if you're going to engage in heated debates, and certainly, look, there are things to fight for in this country. I'm not saying don't speak out loudly. I'm the first one to speak out loudly about certain issues. And I haven't done it on this podcast lately because I'm kind of on a different vibe right now. And there's also 10 trillion people engaging in that debate right now. So, you know, there's a time and place. I'll get back to that. However, if you're going to engage in those kind of heated debates, balance it out a little bit. You know, you do more uplifting people and making them feel good and making them feel understood. And there'll be less people. You'll actually get through to them more anyway. You know how many times when I used to tweet all the time about political stuff and society and all those, I'd get into those heated topics. Like, once a day, somebody would say to me, hey, dude, like, you're the first one that had a respectful debate with me ever. Or, like, you actually make good points and stuff. Because even within those arenas, you can come at people without, you know, ridiculing them or being an idiot about, like, there's a way to engage with people. Not only is it a better way to engage, it's more successful anyway. I ended up actually finding common ground with people you never think. That's where you get changed somebody's mind, not by telling them, not by calling them names. But, like, you know, normally if I tweet something positive and uplifting, you know, I could then go on and go, you know, Joe Biden's the worst president ever. Yeah, fuck this and that. And it'll get 10 times more views because people like engaging in the vitriolic stuff, regardless of the topic. So that'd be the other part of my resolution. More positivity all around, real life, social media, more helping people, more uplifting people, more complimenting people. If you're going to criticize somebody, compliment them instead. I always say it on here too, which I've seen in real life and then thought to myself, it's like the most amazing thing ever, which is just compliment strangers. I actually do some of that too. Even if it's like, you know, for a dude, it could be their car or something, you know, where you could say something nice to women saying nice things to other. Everybody's just compliment each other. Compliment a random person one day. Tell them, like, oh man, those are awesome shoes. You know what I mean? Why the fuck not? Make somebody's day with little stuff like that. What else? I'll play more golf. I'm getting back into golf lately. I played this week. Played awful. I wish to God I had started as a little kid. Or as a kid, as a minor, I wish to God, like, it wasn't cool yet. And I actually lived in a town with country clubs and friends who play golf, which sucks. And then I lived in Florida where everyone played golf. But I was like, oh, that's dorky. And then Tiger made it cool. Look, I'm not that naturally athletically inclined to begin with, but I didn't start playing until I was 20 something. Everyone I know, athletic or not, that started as a kid just has like a natural ingrained swing. Kids learn everything faster, whether it's languages, you know, a golf swing, how to throw a fucking baseball, whatever the case, you ingrain a movement that if you try to first learn it as an adult, you're starting on such a, no one on the PGA tour started playing golf at 20, but regardless. So every time I take a lot of time off from it, which I haven't played in a long time, it's ugly out there for a minute. For me to play anywhere decent golf, like, I got to be playing at least a couple times a week, going to the range, getting my feel back with my saw. I mean, the short game, you can't just show up at a course every 6 months and expect to have any type of touch going on. You know, you're just jumping. Like, I'm not even hitting the range before these rounds either. I'm just jumping right out there. So it's a scene, but I had fun. It's 90 fucking degrees. It's January. I'm playing the end of December. It's 90 degrees. I was having a heat stroke. They don't have water on the course because of Corona. They take away the big, you know, water things with the coolers and the stacks of cups. You can't even get water. I had like one warm Dasani bottle, which is like salt water. The vending machine's not working. I was going to go in because I was having a heat stroke. Luckily, these old dudes I was with, had one guy had a cooler. I grabbed ice out of his cooler. I was like bathing myself in this guy's ice. It's fucking December 31st. But yeah, golf is therapeutic. So I recommend it. You can still pick it up late in life and have a really good time with it. It's the kind of game where it's fun for you at any skill level because you're just playing against the course. You're not playing against anyone else. So whether you're a complete beginner or whatever, you're always improving and you're always getting, it's like, and you never hit the same shot twice, as they always say, which you don't. So it's just a lot of variety. You're outside. You can walk a lot. You can ride the cart. You can have drinks and snacks. And it's addicting. People get really into it. Women, men, old people. It's like that's the other thing, too. It's all ages. Little kids playing. 90-year-old dudes playing. Everybody plays. You always get the dudes out. This is the funny thing about golf, too. It's like, you live for hitting that next great pure shot. Like, it feels so good when you just pure a shot and hit it exactly how you want to hit it. Or you sink a great putt or whatever. So like, there's always the guy in the group. Whenever I get grouped with other people, it's always like the dude who's, oh man, he's like, I hit that great the other day. I hit that perfect. It's always, they always hit a bad shot and then tell you about how great they were hitting it the last time or how good they hit it on this hole the other day. And it's like, that's the whole game. Like, it's the consider, like, anyone can hit. It's like, if I took my best shot I've ever hit on every hole at the course I play. I'm shooting, you know, 10 under, like I've birdied every hole. I'd shoot 18 under because I probably at some point or another, if I play a course enough, I'll have birdied every hole. So like I'd be the best guy on tour. It's like, that's the point. Can you do it repetitively? Now, obviously these guys aren't hitting it as long and everything else, but still, if they could hit their best shot every time, they'd be out there shooting under par. So of course we believe you that last Tuesday you hit a great 7-iron on this hole, but obviously you can't hit it every time. What are you gonna birdie the hole every time you play? Then you on the Champions Tour right now. Yeah, golf is another one where you'll start to feel that mortality creeping in on you. Like I was saying, I started at 20, but that was 20 years ago. And you know, you play around of golf now, you got a lot of aches and pains and things clicking around. I was riding a wave runner the other day out on choppy ocean, and I could not feel my legs for 4 days, and I tore my rib cage open, and I hurt my wrist somehow on that thing. So yeah, man, getting old, you start to feel it. It's the one thing I would say when you hit around 40 something, you start to think about, wow, how long do I really have where I'm capable of doing certain things? You know, when you're young, you just wanted to speed up so bad. You think, oh, it's going to get better and I'll get to do these other different things. And if I could just progress from this to that and that, you want to progress. And then it's like, at a certain point, you're like, whoa, 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 this thing's going fast. Like it's the last 10 years are just a blur, you know? And then again, you waste so much time and energy. If you really sat down and thought about the amount of time and energy you've wasted and like added it up, it would make you sick, you know, and people spend all their time. Like that's the other thing. It's 22 that if there's one advantage to technology, it's this right here. It's anyone can do anything. Like if you want to start a baking channel on YouTube, let's say you're an amazing baker. If it was 1988 or even 1998 or even probably 2008, and you wanted to start a baking show, that would have been really difficult. And you would have had to sign some contract with, you know, some channel and all these other things. You could do that now for free. Just put a camera in your kitchen. And if you're personable and you're baking, it's like, you could put it on YouTube. You could put it on Instagram. You could make TikTok videos. And a lot of people, if they're great at it and you think you'd be great at it, just do it all the time. You may end up doing that as a career instead of having to show up at somebody's shitty box every day and spend all your waking hours just devoting your soul to somebody else's creation. It's like, and a lot of people don't do that stuff because they think, well, what would people think of me? They'll think I'm weird. They'll think it's stupid. Like I work at this office. What am I going to do? Start an online baking show? Well, yeah. You think you're a good baker? Or whatever you want to sell, or whatever you want to talk about, or blog about, or podcast about, or any millions of other things now that you can use technology to do and work for yourself and pursue some sort of dream or passion. Worst case is it doesn't work or whatever, but like it's far more likely you'll be sitting there toward the end of your life going, man, I really should have tried that at least one time or seen if I would have been good at that. I always thought I'd be successful at this other thing. And instead I wasted 40 years just doing this other bullshit that I hated. For what? You know, if the only thing standing in your way from pursuing something like that is fear, it's like even more reason to do it. I mean, if I learn anything about myself, it's any decision I ever made based on being afraid resulted in, you know, biggest regrets of my life. So I think that goes for a lot of people. It's like, and anything I ever did that I was afraid to do, I was really proud of myself that I did it. So there's a big lesson everybody can learn from for sure. And listen, by that same token, you know, let people be who they are. Other people in your life, like, If you're someone that wants to pursue something or do or say whatever, it's like you got to block out people that are negative about it or think you're weird or whatever. But everyone else should still do a better job of not being so judgmental and imposing their shit on everybody else. Like, just let people be who they are. It's like, it's such an easy thing. Why would anybody want to mold someone else's, you know, behavior or mind? Like, unless it's your kid, you know, I'm not a parent, but I mean, even your kid, just let them be who the fuck they want to be. But obviously there's certain things you do have to control about a child. But so beyond that, like other adults in your life or adult children, perhaps, or sibling, what's like anyone, friends, coworkers, like, and the worst is when people have issues and they act like you're the crazy and you're the crazy one. And they impose it on you. Like, I know I'm crazy, you know, and I own a lot of my crazy shit. So I'll usually take ownership of how crazy I am. And I also don't try to control anyone else's behavior, because especially if I'm, you know, in a crazy place, I'm not going to impose it on anyone else. I think there's a lot of crazy people imposing their crazy stuff on other people and acting like the other people are the crazy ones. Don't do that. New Year's res. But yeah, time is our most precious entity. Oh, I'm going to forget that saying. Something about once you spend it, you can own it, or you could spend it, but you can't own it. I don't know. Something like that. You know, once it's gone, you never get it back. Here's something interesting that I was thinking about with time. It's like you're spending it, right? But you don't know how much you're spending from. You know what I mean? Like, you're choosing how to spend your time, but you don't know how much of it you have left in the bank. So it's even more reason to not be fucking wasting it. I mean, anything can happen. Not to take a dark twist, it's a New Year's episode, but anything can happen to you at any time. So yeah, and end of the year, those are my main lessons. And the stuff I always talk about in here, you know, I'll reiterate my yearly positive rant, you know, help people in real life, do something for somebody, say something like stop fucking virtue signaling all the time. You're not doing shit. If you want to, you know, spend money on charities and things, great. Actually, like, find some person in real life and think of something they need or ask them what they need and then do something helpful for that person. What else? Forgive yourself. Forgive other people. For real, for real. Don't be so hard on yourself. And then don't be so hard on other people on top. You'll find the two go hand in hand. You'll find when you ease up on yourself, you'll naturally ease up on everybody else too. Because I'll say it again, if you're pissed off at the world or you're pissed off at other people, you're most likely really just pissed off at yourself. Don't let fear paralyze you. Don't sit there stuck in your own fucking head thinking about all the what ifs and the regrets of the past and the anxiety. Stop it. The indecision and the inaction will fuck you up worse than anything. It really will. So try to get out of that stuff too. And you live once. That's it. You live once. What's the worst that can happen? That's what should go through your head every time you think about something long term. What's the worst that can happen? Short term or long term? Biggest advice right there. Don't be shy. Don't be embarrassed to say what you want. You know, to feel vulnerable. Put your guard down with people. Don't waste time with any of that bullshit either. Again, all of this stuff is such a waste of time and energy. It's we're creating mental prisons for ourselves. People are doing that all day, every day. I do it, and I see everybody else doing it too. And then, honestly, above all else, be appreciative and be thankful for what you have. Because, again, without the basics, without health, and basic essentials and things like that, all that other stuff I mentioned almost doesn't even matter. Because, yeah, it's cliche, but there's still people sitting in hospital beds and in other terrible parts of the world who trade places with you and all your baggage in a half a second without even giving another thought. So always keep that in mind as well. It'll help you stay appreciative. It's good karma on top of it. And that's my That's my New Year's rant. You'll notice I changed the intro music. I've been changing the intro music to tease the list I do at the end of all these shows. And I'm doing a random, niche topic this week. Some are going to be big, broad topics. Like I did top TV drama series. That's a big one. This is top 10 Brad Pitt movies. I like that you could pick a different actor. Brad Pitt, I was talking about this online the other day. We were having a whole, this is why I decided to do the Brad Pitt list, because I was saying what an underrated actor he is. And he is. He's one of the most famous actors. But I think people think, oh, it's because he's a heartthrob or whatever. Like, I really don't think he gets credit for actually being. Plus, he's really kind of a mimbo in real life, which makes it even more enigmatic, because he's pulling this from some sort of depth inside of him. In any case, the song playing there probably gave it away at the beginning, and it's such a beautiful piano. I'm going to let it run on the outro even longer. But Brad has such a deep library. He really does. And he almost doesn't make bad movies. He's got a couple stinkers in there maybe, but not really. So I'm going to give, again, these are my, I think this list is actually going to be a little controversial, because in fact, I know it will. Nobody would have this in this order as their top 10 Brad Pitt, especially not, dudes my age and that stuff. So I'd like to get y'all's thoughts. All right, starting off at number one, this is definitely going to be a controversial one. The best Brad Pitt movie ever made was Legends of the Fall. 100%. I know it makes me sound cheesy. People think it's like a romance movie. Yeah, it's got a lot of romance in it, but it's based, it's based in Montana around, right when World War One is starting, like 1914. It covers a long span of like 15 years or so. I'm sure most people have seen this film. Anthony Hopkins is in it, Aidan Quinn, etc. And Brad's the crazy. A lot of people maybe don't like, the lost, tortured soul types, for whatever reason. I gravitate toward those type characters. But it's like a war love story epic. Like when people say epic, it's like sprawling Montana, beautifully shot, woods and all the sprawling rural areas out there in Montana, early 1900s. So it's really beautiful from that standpoint. And it's just about family and brothers and their dad. And Anthony Hopkins is amazing in it. So I've seen that movie more than any other Brad Pitt movie for sure. It used to be on TV all the time, but it's the kind of movie I always watch. I know it makes me sound cheesy. I know he's done a million amazing other movies. Legends of the Fall is number one for sure. All right. Coming in number two, we're going with Seven. Seven with Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman, serial killer movie. To me, is the best serial killer movie ever made. By the way, there might be spoiler alerts in this list, so heads up, spoiler alerts. Kevin Spacey is amazing in it as the serial killer. He doesn't really show up till the end, but I'm sure everyone's seeing it. It's all these murders based around the seven deadly sins. It's interesting. It takes place in like a fake. Here's what's interesting about it. I always say most horror movies go wrong, or a lot of like dark suspense thriller movies go wrong, in my opinion, is they start out too dark. And what I mean by that is they jump right in and it's already dark and gloomy and rainy and the lights are all off in every scene. So there's no contrast there. Like I remember watching Poltergeist as a kid, the first Poltergeist. And I think part of why it was so effective was it started out in like the daytime and the parents were out in the, drinking beer in the yards and the kids were, had the remote control cars out and everything. And it's like, and in fact, if you remember in Poltergeist 2, when the weird stuff started happening with the furniture and the cabinets and all that, it was also daytime, lights on. It made it creepier in a way. That was an extreme example. But the better ones kind of start out with the normalcy and then hit you with the terror. This movie actually starts out, it's very dark and gloomy, but so that was my point. It's unique in that sense, because normally I don't like if a movie's kind of dark from beginning to end. And it's nothing supernatural in this one, but at the same time, it's a very intense, dark movie, but it had such an authentic tone to it the whole time. It kind of just brought you into like this world of, you know, dread and hopelessness. It's, I don't know. It's dark, man. Maybe it's a bad sign that that's my number two favorite, but I've always loved the serial killer genre. What can I say? I wrote a middle school research paper on Jeffrey Dahmer. So I don't know. I shouldn't be sharing all this. It makes me sound like a psycho. All right. Coming in number three. This is going to be controversial too. I don't think people would have it this high, but I'm going to move it to number three. I got my own reasons for it. Moneyball. I'm sure you've seen it. This is the true story. He plays Billy Bean, the GM for the Oakland A's, and he brings in Jonah Hill, like the math genius, and they do all these unorthodox statistics stuff to beat all the teams with more money. And then he's got, you know, the manager, rest in peace, Philip Seymour Hoffman. Apparently, that guy's family, not Seymour Hoffman's family. What was the manager? The manager that Seymour Hoffman played, whose name I can't think of right now. Apparently his family was not happy about the way he was portrayed in the film because they really did make him like, you know, an unagreeable dick. So that's interesting. I don't know. Moneyball is just one of those movies that's really easy to watch and just kind of hits you. It's like, it's almost like one of those formulas. Like, I don't know. It's the kind of movie you could just sit down, you could put on. It's baseball in movies always makes me feel great. Like baseball in real life, I always find a little boring. And then I end up loving all the baseball movies. I think because they make it a little more dramatic than the real game, which is only sometimes dramatic, but I don't know. The scenes, it's like they're very satisfying scenes throughout the movie with Brad and Jonah. And it's like the two of them, it's like anytime you have a movie where everybody doubts the protagonist and you know, it's like you're in on a little secret with the main character. Like you guys know he's right and you know he'll be proven right. And you just can't wait to prove everybody right. And every time you prove everyone a little more wrong, I'm sorry, you can't wait to prove everybody wrong. And every time you do, it's like a satisfying little thing that happens with you as the audience. All right, coming in at number four, Inglourious Basterds, Quentin Tarantino. Everybody's seen it. Brad Pitt heads up the special unit in World War II. They're hunting Nazis, killing Nazis. That's his line. Quentin Tarantino does, you know, where he does like a historical event. It's like his own alternate reality of how World War II went and his own alternate ending of what would have happened. And it introduced to most people this actor I'd never heard of, Christoph Waltz, who's fucking amazing in that movie as Hans. I don't know. They call him the Jew Hunter. That's a really Quentin Tarantino. Again, talk about someone who doesn't make, whether people like the guy or not, his movies are so damn entertaining. I mean, if I was to list my top 50 all-time movies, for example, you know, 3/4 of Quentin Tarantino's movies would probably be in my top 50, if not higher than that. Just the dialogue that he writes, just such intense, long, interesting scenes that are often, he goes from the craziest action ever and the goriest stuff ever to, it could be 20 minutes in a room with people picking apart the deepest minutia on the most mundane of subjects. And it's, turns out to just be super interesting, and character development through that dialogue. Like, I don't know anyone else that directs that way. A lot of people try to copy it, but Quentin's the best at that. All right. Coming in at number five, we have A River Runs Through It. That's probably controversial too. This is another, here's what's so interesting. Okay. I actually wrote this down so I would remember because the fucking dates, right? Which is this. Brad did Legends of the Fall. He did A River Runs Through It in 1992, and he did Legends of the Fall in 1994. That's when he filmed them. They both take place in Montana, and they both take place between like 1910 and 1930, right? Like Legends is like 1914 to 1930, and River is from like 1910 to 1935, right? So what's the deal? He just happened to do two movies in a row, basically, both set in Montana during the same time period. He's definitely going through a real period in his own life, I think. I don't know, but that it's very similar feel, but he's a much, much different character, although he's still a tortured soul in so many ways. And there is a lot of parallels, but it's the preacher dad, it's the two brothers, and it's based around a lot of fly fishing. And again, it's just beautiful in Montana, the mountains and the rivers and the fishing, and it's so well acted. And just, you know, something about a period piece like those that, you know, it if they're done correctly, they really, it's something magical about just bringing you to another time. You're like, you know, you imagine what would it have been like to live back then and wear those clothes and, you know, ride horses and all that type of stuff. All right. I'm going to keep this list going. I'm saying too much stuff about these movies. I keep moving along. Number six, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, another Quentin Tarantino movie. I didn't see this one immediately when it came out for whatever reason. I saw it like a year later and I thought it was the most entertaining thing I'd watched in a good couple years. Again, Quentin's a genius. The dialogue's great, but it takes place. It's another alternate history loosely based around the Charlie Manson murders, and Brad Pitt and Leo DiCaprio find themselves inserted into this story with Charlie Manson because Leo, who Brad works with, is living next door to the Sharon Tate, where the Tate LaBianca murders took place, or Roman Polanski's house or whatever. Anyway, insanely entertaining. And the final scene in that movie, which is a Brad scene, is one of the most satisfying and fun final scenes of any movie. So, you know, if people don't mind a lot of cursing and gore and all that, and you've missed these films and not seen Quentin Tarantino's work or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, go watch that movie ASAP. All right, coming in at number seven, everyone's seen it, Ocean's 11. It's been a huge series. Everyone knows the movie. I love a heist movie. This is more of an ensemble cast. You know, maybe Once Upon a Time in Hollywood wasn't a Brad movie either. His co-stars, him and Leo. This is definitely more ensemble Clooney, but I'd say Brad, again, is like the second biggest role in Ocean's. And Ocean's 11 is just such a fun, fast-paced, easy-watch heist movie with the murderers all great actors and, you know, Matt Damon and Casey Affleck and Elliot Gould and all these guys. Bernie Mac, may he rest in peace. Who doesn't love Ocean's 11? Remake, by the way. I know there was an original from like the 60s. I've never seen it. I haven't seen the original Ocean's from the 60s. Sorry. Number eight, Curious Case of Benjamin Button. Brad Pitt, Cate Blanchett. Everyone knows this movie. It's become a punchline for so many things. Benjamin Button, because he's ages in reverse. He starts out as a little old man and then becomes a little kid at the end. And when he's an old man, he meets this woman and they kind of meet in the middle when they're middle aged. And then, listen, any movie, I'm a sucker for like a romantic dramedy with like magic stuff in it. Magics. If there's some magics in there, then I'm a fan. You have the romantic dramedy stuff and the magic stuff, like Family Man's one of my favorite movies. So anything with that, I like. Not embarrassed to say it. All right, coming in at number nine. Couldn't be more of a different film. It's called Fury. I bet a lot of people haven't seen Fury. Fury is another World War II movie. It's a tank movie. It's this tank unit that has to go in like against all odds in this battle in World War II. And Brad's the higher ranking guy. I don't know what his rank in that movie is, but Shia LaBeouf is in it. The kid from Perks of Being a Wallflower is almost like the main character in that movie in a way, and kind of steals the show in a lot of ways. I can't think of his name, but it's a very gritty, intense, like dirty war movie. If you like a good gritty war movie, I definitely recommend it. And for whatever reason, I love watching Fury. All right, coming in at number 10. This is one I bet a lot of people haven't seen. Bit of a sleeper pick, pun intended. It's called Sleepers. Sleepers has Kevin Bacon. Robert De Niro's got a little part in it. I would say Brad, it's like an ensemble cast. Brad might be considered kind of the main. He's a district attorney. It's about these boys that get sent to this terrible reform school when they're younger, like maybe in the 60s. They get like horribly abused. sexually, all types of stuff. And then when they're older, two of the boys who are like gangsters now, they see Kevin Bacon in this restaurant, who was one of the guards that abused them, and they kill him. And this, like I said, you know what? I told you spoiler alerts before. They kill the dude. Brad Pitt's the DA, etc. It goes to trial. Chaos ensues. I don't know. I don't know why I like that movie. It's just a good, unique little drama. And I feel like of everything on the list, people haven't seen it. So you haven't, if you haven't seen Sleepers, go check it out. It's a well-made film. Listen, there's some huge, Brad's made a gazillion movies. I feel silly doing a Brad Pitt list, but I said on Twitter the other day I'm doing a Brad Pitt list, so I did it. Boom, done. Fight Club, 12 Monkeys, California, The Mexican, Snatch. I mean, you're talking about iconic movies. There's so many more things you could have put on that list. So that's it for that. And I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. Hope you enjoyed the show. Happiest, healthiest new year ever to all you guys and to your families. And I hope the new year brings everybody everything they want in life. Just open yourself up to it a little bit more and you'd be surprised what comes in. Love and appreciate you all. And I will be back in a couple days. Thank you so much. Be well. Peace.